Monster Man, bonus episode, September 2023. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode, going out to my Patreon backers at all levels as a thank you for your continued support. In these episodes, I like to just talk about what I've been up to over the month. This usually means what I've been reading, what I've been playing. This month, I think playing is going to be a pretty small total. I've been in a handful of games. I played some Call of Cthulhu with colleagues online. That was fun. And I have played in and run one session each of my D&D games just because scheduling has been a problem. And, you know, by a problem, it's mostly good things, right? Two players in my D&D game that I run just got married. But it does mean that the gaming section is pretty short this month, and for that matter, it's going to be for next month as well, because in October I'm traveling for a couple of game dates. I'm hoping for a pretty active November before everyone goes away for Christmas, and at the end of October, of course, there'll be our traditional Halloween game, where I and some friends get together to play something thematically appropriate. It's not always Call of Cthulhu, although in fact our current Call of Cthulhu campaign started as a Halloween game, but this one's probably going to be Wuffrup, I think. Quite looking forward to that. And fingers crossed, I might run some battles in my Rogue Trader campaign. We shall see how that goes. But anyway, I have been keeping up with my reading and watching some films. TV-wise, I've been watching Ahsoka and Only Murders in the Building, like everyone else. And I'm also catching up on a lot of older Gundam shows. I'm really into Gundam at the moment. It'll fade. I do think that shows like that are built to... I don't have the collector mindset, but I have the info collector mindset. So knowing all the different types of mobile suits is very appealing to me. Something I want to watch out for. It's also, like, a show that I can watch as I go to sleep. I don't know why, because they're pretty action-packed, but those shows put me to sleep pretty quickly. So I haven't been making incredibly fast progress through these shows, but I'm enjoying them nonetheless. Reading this month, what have I been up to? I read a Jack Vance novel, Ecky and Old Earth, if you pronounce it Ecky. I assume it's Ecky, like, behold. It's the sequel to Araminta Station, so it's one of the Cadwal Chronicles, which are set within the Gaian Reach, that setting of the eponymous RPG. You know, the more you have a setting that has, like, a real society rather than something like the Dying Earth, I think the weirder Vance's characterization and dialogue become, and the kind of cornier his political stereotyping is. I'm still really enjoying them because you're not really there for, like, the social theorizing with Vance. You're there for the language. I read the collection of Angela Carter's short stories, The Bloody Chamber, which I thought was very good. I mean, you know, newsflash, Angela Carter, good at writing. This was inspired by some Angela Carter stuff on Strange Studies of Strange Stories a little while ago, reminding me that I bought that book and never read it. So I went back and did that. I mean, months later, that was months ago, but that those episodes were out. But I finally got around to reading it. You know, speaking of kind of mainly there for the language, like the imagery, there's, I think, the kind of like the game inspiration mindset that I think a lot of people have when they read things like this, you know, kind of undersells this because a lot of the stories are not conceptually interesting, but that's not a criticism. I just mean that's not really what they're about. I don't think I never actually read any Carter before. I liked the Neil Jordan film, The Company of Wolves, which is obviously inspired by Carter's short fiction. I read the Glorantha book, The Earth Goddesses, which is the second of that pair that came out, The Lightbringers, The Earth Goddesses. The Earth Goddesses and Glorantha are interesting because a lot of the Gloranthan deities function a little bit mythologically like deities function in our world, which, if you think about it, maybe doesn't make very much sense, but that's okay. The Earth Goddesses in some ways represent an older way of thinking about certain types of deity. But whatever, they're cool. The way in which this is presented, you know, I think most people's connection in Glorantha to the Earth Goddesses is going to be with Ernalda as the consort of Orlanth. And this really does a good job, I think, of giving her this overlapping, but not at all just like and Ernalda existence. I read a book about medieval philosophy. It was called Medieval Philosophy. I don't know very much about medieval philosophy. You know, like, I know who the prominent philosophers were, but actually the kinds of debates that were going on, not something I know a huge amount about, so I enjoyed that. I feel like I learned some things. I feel like I understand Anselm's proof of the existence of God. I mean, I don't think it's right, but I know more about what it is now, so that's cool. I finished reading a book that I was writing a review of, and indeed I've yet to write the review, but at least I've written all my notes, The Norse Sorceress, so that was good. There's a lot of really interesting work being done on magic and religion in the early medieval Scandinavian world at present, after a long time, at least in Scandinavia, of it being kind of downplayed as something that was very hard to be objective about. So that I thought was really interesting. And I read a terrible Warhammer novel that I picked up in like a 5-for-4, you know, £1 used book stall at a fair, Desert Raiders by Lucien Soubin. My understanding is that it is like infamously bad. It is writing like puzzles and paradoxes is always challenging because you want them to be accessible, and you have to bear in mind that like the audience for a Warhammer 40,000 book, you know, could very well include like early teenagers, so therefore like the puzzle can't be that hard, but it also can't be so easy that the characters seem like a bunch of idiots for not thinking of the possible solution, which is what happens in this book. Also, it is like a little bit of a shame that it decided to do the whole Lawrence of Arabia bit, not with like the white savior, although there is one, but the Desert Raiders in 40K are these kind of like, you know, Arab inspired regiment from the Imperial Guard, and in this book, they are portrayed as short-sighted, petty, intolerant, tribalistic, blood feud idiots, which is a bit of a shame. Like, in general, I would say that the portrayals of the other cultures that make up the Imperial Guard are typically a little more positive. Not universally. Whatever. I also read a bunch of comic books, and this is for two reasons. One is that I bought a Humble Bundle, the Trail of Cthulhu Humble Bundle, that was out this month, and that meant that I remembered that I have a bunch of stuff in my Humble Bundle library that I hadn't read. And then also, one of the students that I'm tutoring, I'm at the local library, and therefore I keep checking out graphic novels from the library. So I read the classic Mark Waid, George Perez Avengers story, Ultron Unlimited, which has that Ultron, we would have words with the panel. I read the first couple volumes of a thing called Wayward, which is a comic written by Jim Zub, and I forget who does the art, but it's okay, it's fine, it's whatever, but I really enjoyed the stuff about monsters from Japanese folklore in it. I mean, and interesting how they blend folklore and fiction, so that there are a lot of things that I think Western audiences look at and go, ah, this is a creature from Japanese folklore, and like, this is a creature from like a book from the 50s. So, you know, maybe as like an outsider, we don't, or I don't anyway, necessarily have that kind of perspective. So it was nice to see some of this explained by someone who knew a bit more about it. I don't even remember who wrote it now. Glitterbomb. That's Jim Zub again, I want to say. It's a monster story about a has-been actress who winds up getting possessed by, or taken over by, a kind of Cthulhu-y monstrosity, but then it combines with her to destroy all of those Hollywood scumbags. That sounds bad. It's not really as simplistic as I'm making it sound. It was fine. Read some BPRD stuff. Sledgehammer 44 was fine. And I read Jeff Lemire's graphic novel Trillium, which did some interesting things with the way that it, like, paired its two overlapping narratives, so sort of like two stories told from the perspectives of the two main characters that intersect at times and reflect each other at times. I don't enjoy Jeff Lemire's art very much. There's bits of it that are set in a kind of alternate history timeline. I don't know, there's something about, they seem kind of insubstantial, the backgrounds, they look a little bit like sets. I don't quite know how to describe it. Maybe it's because they spend a lot of time in like archaeological sites, and I'm like, well, I just feel like these types of buildings are much more complex. They're often kind of like, they're schematic, but they don't have that like Alex Toth-y, Cliff Chang-y kind of clean eye iconic presentation. I don't quite know how to describe it. Anyway, whatever. Like, I'm not saying it was bad. Me, personally, I sometimes don't get on with Jeff Lemire's art. The session of my D&D game that I ran, jumping back to gaming for a minute, one of the nice things about it was that things happened in it that, like, gave me fun ideas for directions that I could take the game in, which is always a lot of fun. And so I'm doing a little rewriting on the fly, but that's fine because, of course, I'm going to be away for 10 days, and that should give me some time to, you know, just sit and write for a bit. I will say that, and I never do, but I'll try to make the effort. If I'm going on holiday, I might as well really try to relax. Film-wise, I completed my watching of all the original Planet of the Apes movies by watching Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, a bleak movie. I do think that the moral bit about, like, how it's not okay to respond to oppression with violence being put into the mouth of a black character, I understand that. That makes sense. You know, but to then have him delivering those lines to an ape is a little... I don't think they would do it today. And furthermore, I think we wouldn't necessarily take that stance for granted today. I actually started watching this a long time ago and I never got around to finishing it. I finished Satoshi Kon's animated film Paprika, which I thought had amazing visuals and great scenes of, like, chaos and weirdness. Genuinely weirdness. But plot-wise, the plot is interesting, but essentially there to drive internal character stuff and imagery. I watched Yorgos Lanthimos' sort of satirical Queenian comedy The Favorite, which I gather has drawn criticisms for some of its historical inaccuracies, but which did have some very good performances. I felt a rather cynical view of how government operated in that period, but probably not an inaccurate one. You know, in broad outline. Though, apparently, the reasons why the character that Rachel Weisz plays in the movie fell from favor were much more explicitly political, and to do with her advocacy of political positions that the Queen didn't agree with, so at least there seems to have been a substantive ideological reason for their break. Although, obviously, there were personal feelings as well. I watched Blue Beetle. I'm a big fan of the John Rogers, Rafael Albuquerque run on Blue Beetle from the kind of mid-2000s. I don't remember the exact dates, but it was prior to the New 52, which is the point where I stopped really paying as much attention to modern DC Comics. I thought it was a bit of a mixed bag. I love it when Raul Trujillo is in things. He's the villain in this, Raul Max Trujillo. And I thought that Sholomar Dueña, who's the lead, was very good. I understood the decision to kind of combine the exposition character of Danny Garrett and the love interest character, Tracy 13, into a single character. Like, there was a lot of good stuff in it. There were some bits where they had clearly pulled a Thor 3 and, like, they were doing scenes from the comics but sort of shorn of their context, so they didn't really make any sense. But it was like a solid B, which pretty much makes it the best of the DC films, which is a shame. But there's kind of like an upper tier of DC movies where you're just like, oh yeah, this is solid entertainment, right? It doesn't have a profound moral vacuity like Man of Steel. I watched terrible 80s action film Dragonfight, which I don't recommend. And for that matter, weird early 80s Filipino supernatural adventure film Boy God, both of these on bad movie nights. I watched horror comedy Jennifer's Body, which you may remember. There seemed to be a lot of these kind of like 2000s-y, was it the early 2010s? I don't remember exactly when it came out, but it was a script by Diablo Cody. Remember when, like, Diablo Cody was the next big thing? Anyway, it's all right. It's certainly got Megan Fox turning in a, you know, maybe it's being unfair of me to say surprisingly compelling performance. I would broadly say that I haven't seen Megan Fox be very good in things, but I also haven't seen Megan Fox be given very good parts to play. So, you know, maybe it's not her fault. I don't think it knocked it out of the park necessarily, but there were a lot of bits of it that I thought were very well executed. The sort of standard criticism of it seems to be that it's not really funny enough to be a comedy, and it's not really scary enough to be a horror film, which I think is probably fair. I was sick for a couple of days, and while sick in bed, I watched Patty Jenkins' follow-up to her Wonder Woman film, Wonder Woman 1984, an extremely weird movie because it shares with the first film the same central flaw, which is a really good first half and a pretty bad second half, including a climax, which is a big, well, sort of a penultimate climax, which is a weird way to put it. But, you know, the villain fight is a big murky blue CGI mess. And the moral doesn't really bear a lot of thinking about. It really seemed like a script that had been through many, many revisions. Couldn't quite decide what it was all for. Speaking of things I watched in bed while, like, going through stuff that had fetched up on my Netflix list, Edgar Wright's supernatural thriller Last Night in Soho. I thought it was good. Boy, Edgar Wright sure does do a lot of work in the soundtrack selection phase, huh? There were bits of it that I thought were not so great. The mystery reveal was kind of simultaneously a bit obvious and also, like, a little bit out of the blue because it sort of hinges on the protagonist, Thomasin McKenzie's character. McKenzie, is that her name? Anyway, whatever. The protagonist not asking some questions that seem pretty obvious to ask. And then finally, a movie which, weirdly, is on Disney+, Park Chan-wook's 2013 sort of psychological thriller crime drama Stoker, which I learned was written by Wentworth Miller, Captain Cold from The Flash, and I guess the guy from Prison Break, a show I never watched. It is okay. I'm not like a huge Park Chan-wook fan. You know, I watched Old Boy like everybody else did, and I went, wow, that's messed up. And I've meant to watch The Handmaiden for a long time, but I've never really got around to it. But I understand it's kind of his masterpiece. Stoker's a bit of a mixed bag. It is one of those things where you get this with, like, James Ellroy as well. Like, fundamentally, the plot of a James Ellroy novel is often so dumb that, like, it's not that the plot is dumb, but that, like, the revelation is dumb and only works because the Elrovian world is so weirdly heightened that the fact that none of this makes any sense if you're thinking about a realistic world where people live, he can get away with that. And I think, you know, if you buy into Stoker, which I did largely on the strength of the three central performances, I think if you buy into that, then you can look at it and say, well, obviously, like, on an intellectual level, this is a bunch of gothic melodrama, and it's just Park carrying it all with this incredibly distinctive visual approach. But, you know, it sort of works in the moment. I struggled a little bit, because obviously, like, I'm watching this on my phone in bed, and I feel like a film like that sort of, like, tries to hold your face to its moments of, like, discomfort and tension. And when you're on your phone, it's very tempting to just, like, pop off and check your email for a minute or two when things get a little too uncomfortable, which can rob a movie like that of some of its impact, I suppose. But, you know, overall, I would say I enjoyed it. Well, maybe enjoyed is the wrong word, but I'm glad that I watched it. I'm sorry if this is a little bit of a low-energy episode. I'm still not 100% recovered, and the old dysphonia is really playing up. But I have high hopes of being rested and refreshed by the end of my trip, because I'm going to record a bunch of episodes and I'm going to edit them while I'm in the US, but I'm not going to record. So I should give the old vocal cords a little bit of a rest. Obviously, I won't be teaching either. I mean, I will be obviously talking to people, but I do that anyway, you know? So it just takes a couple things off the list. And I think that that will ultimately be helpful. So yeah, that's what I've been up to in September. I hope to have some fun things from my trip to report when we talk again in October. But until then, I hope that you enjoyed this month's bonus episode, because everybody is dying for capsule reviews of niche thrillers that opened on 300 screens 10 years ago. But, you know, I said I'd report on what I've been up to, and that's what I've been up to. Next week, we're going to be going back to Al-Qadim mainly, because if I'm preparing so far in advance, I'm probably not going to do specials. But if you have a special request outstanding, don't forget to send what you'd like me to talk about into me, because we're probably going to be doing a boss rush for quite a lot of the last month or two of 2023, which is a weird thing to say, but I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram @MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.